It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
LV. 20 years ago, my guest, who grew up in Ohio, fell in love with Las Vegas. And since then, he's dedicated his energy to researching and enjoying the city. He created the 360 Vegas podcast, a weekly production, which also includes approximately 30 hours of vintage Vegas episodes on the history of Las Vegas. These particular segments led him to becoming a writer. Mark Witowicz is author of Vegas from Fremont to the Strip, How Las Vegas Casinos Evolved. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Mark, go to 360vegaspodcast.com, and you can follow him on Facebook and X. And Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ira.
So what was your earliest memory of Las Vegas?
2004. I came as a lot of people do, as a bucket list kind of a place. And I was very taskmaster-ish because I didn't think I was coming back. So I'm like, well, I got to see everything. And I didn't really get the magic of Vegas until I came back 2 years later, when I was just with friends having a good time from one experience to the next experience. And that's when it really kind of sunk in that I fell in love with this city and I wanted to learn everything I could possibly learn about her. And then that transitioned into a podcast, which I couldn't help but share the information I was learning with people. So that ended up manifesting in that as well. So Vegas has been good to me very creatively.
What were you doing before then? Were you a truck driver or a bartender or a teacher or a nuclear engineer? What were you doing before you decided to write about
Nothing exciting. I was a payroll specialist for a payroll company. I did a lot of math, did a lot of numbers.
Oh, my eyes are closing already. Okay.
Yes.
So that's great. You went from a linear world to a nonlinear world and really enjoyed the sights and sounds, as they say, of Las Vegas. Well, that's
yes.
So you clearly got involved very quickly. Was your wife involved as well? Did she support you in your endeavors?
She supported the energy that I put into it. It took her a while to fall in love with the city. One of the great things about Las Vegas is that it's got many parts to it. And one of the things that my passion and love resides, just because of the book, or as the book says, with Fremont and the Strip. That's where all my energy is spent. That's where all my interest lies. And it was through meeting listeners that my wife met somebody that was a local, and she got to show her the local side of Vegas and got her to realize, like, no, this is just like every other town, you know, outside of the Strip. It's like, now we just happen to be 25 minutes from the coolest downtown in, you know, the history of humanity.
Right. Did you get involved as well off Strip and off downtown? Did you enjoy the local atmosphere? Because as I've discussed with other guests over the last couple of years, particularly, there's a lot of things that go on in Las Vegas away from the Strip, away from downtown, that you can spend pretty much your whole life in Las Vegas and never go to the Strip or downtown. You can take advantage of all that. So did you take a little bit? I know that's not what the book is about. I was just curious. Did you also start getting involved in areas outside of those two main areas?
No, my wife and I are reclusive. So we tend to be very insular. But it's funny you said that. I'm reading a new book. It's not a new book, but it's a book called Sun, Sin, and Suburbia.
Oh, yeah.
And it talks about
the suburbs.
And it, yes. And talks about the Vegas and the suburbs that I had never paid any attention to. I mean, I have my own little community that I'm a part of, but it gave me community pride. Now I'm curious. I want to go to more Summerlin things.
Yeah, it makes sense. And for those who are listening and watching from out of the Las Vegas area, there's a lot of things going on in Summerlin, Green Valley, Lake Mead, Mount Charleston, et cetera, Red Rock Canyon. There's a lot of stuff that goes on as well. But you wrote your book about clearly downtown and the Strip, and I want to talk to you about that. But why did you decide to write the book? I mentioned in my opening a little bit about you had all these episodes within your podcast, and now you decided to put it into book form. What made you decide to do that?
It was the listeners. It was a project that I had had on the back burner for a long time. I'd always thought about it, but the process just seemed far too daunting for me. And thankfully, I had a former guest of yours, Dr. Dave Schwartz, who very much mentored me through the process on how to write a book and how to publish a book, and helped me out tremendously. I cannot thank him enough for the guidance that he provided. He made me feel like a peer. And I couldn't have asked for anything more.
Yeah, he's a great guy and a prolific author. It's amazing how many
books
he's written about gambling and Las Vegas, both. Not necessarily one to the exclusion of the other as well. So you start writing the book and Dave helped you with it. Did you ever get frustrated along the way putting it together that there was a little bit too much, that you bit off too much of what you thought you might be able to do?
No, because I tell people I wrote this. It took me 13 years to write and research this book. I just slowly put it together chapter by chapter. And then at some point, it finally clicked to me that I'm like, wait a minute, if I put these in the right order, there's a linear storyline to this. Like I'll already give you a spoiler alert. There's a book two coming out because the first book was so big that we were like, wait a minute. We've got a narrative that we're following here. Let's follow the narrative and everything that doesn't help that, let's get that out of the way. Now, not that those stories aren't amazing and don't need told, but we've already got a hefty book here at 500 pages.
Yeah, that's a lot. It always struck me as ironic that people such as yourself who are involved in the digital world with podcasts, et cetera, are going back to one of the old formats, in other words, books, and that they're still around and they're still popular. And so no matter what new technology takes over down the line, books seem to always be there.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that. When I first got into the project, again, because I was overwhelmed by what it would take to take care of this, I was concerned about being able to offer a hardback because I was like, well, I'm going to have to change my whole front cover and just things that I was intimidated by. And I had help from a listener of mine, as a dear friend now, that helped me out to be able to offer that up. And that's one of our most popular sellers is, like you're saying, Ira, people want to touch that book. Like, I don't know what it is. There's something about it. They want to handle that book, that physical copy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've talked to so many authors over the years, and occasionally I'll ask the question, which I tend to ask too often, about whether that's a sign of immortality when you write a book, because the book will always be around when you're long gone. I won't ask you that question, Mark. But,
All right.
but it's still fascinating that people just, whether it's hardcover or paperback, it's just something about a book that makes it easier to consume, I guess would be the way to describe it. And if you want to go back to it, you don't have to worry about turning on the computer, turning on your phone, turning on your iPad. You just pick up the book and it's there. And there's no blue light, which is bothering your eyesight too, which is always helpful. So you talked a little bit about the, and for listeners and viewers, if you hear something in my voice, it's pollen time. As everybody that listens and watches me knows, every year at this time, my voice goes because of pollen, but there's not much I can do. So I just work through it. But when you were putting the book together and you mentioned a little bit about the format of the book, did that come to you as a sense of inspiration, or did you just think about it logically and say, okay, I'm going to put this book together, and yes, it should be this way because it makes sense based on my previous research.
That's very much it. The latter is my brain has always worked on how did all these pieces fit together, you know? So everything I tell is in a very linear storyline. Like this happened at this time, this happened at this time. I mean, fortunately, Vegas gives me a lot of colorful characters to paper that up with, but, yeah.
And again, it's called Vegas, From Fremont to the Strip, How Las Vegas Casinos Evolved. It's a fairly long title, but I think people can get it digested, as we mentioned enough times. When you looked at the casino, particularly in Las Vegas, there were casinos in Las Vegas particularly, was there one that struck you as being more historic than others? Not because necessarily it was the first casino in Las Vegas, not necessarily because of, let's say, mob activities in certain periods of time in Las Vegas. It could be some other reason, but was there one that struck you as standing out among all the other casinos?
Caesar's Palace, because Caesar's Palace was around while the Sands was around and while the Dunes was around. And these were competitors. And now Caesars has not only done, Flamingo's done it as well, but Caesars has managed to do it on a high end that they introduced themselves heavily themed. They've evolved over time. They've grown to still be one of the major players in the high end market in Las Vegas. I just thought that was fascinating that so many of their contemporaries fell to the wayside while they found a way to evolve and grow.
Yeah, and they prosper too. And it's interesting from the point of view that there was a period of time, as you would know, researching the book, there was a period of time in Las Vegas where they were getting away from quote-unquote themed casinos. Mm-hmm. And yet one of the most themed casinos is Caesar's Palace. So it outlasted the non-themed casino period and prospered. And despite corporate ownership and despite, in some degrees, a different marketing strategy than from decades before, I agree. It's a little crowded for me, but it's still a unique property considering all that history there.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nightmare to navigate through. I still get lost in it all the time.
Yeah. The one thing that drives me crazy, though, is it's this wonderful property. Then if you come in the back way and self-park, you got to go through elevators that have been or built in who knows when. never been improved since. So there's maybe room for you, me, and one other person, maybe your wife, and that's it. You know,
right.
Wait for the next elevator. But okay, that happens. Were you also, when you were researching the book and writing it, were you looking at events as an indicator of how special a casino was? Like a special event? Yeah. Did that take any sense from you that this is why this casino is unique because of certain special events?
Definitely. The Sands always comes to mind when you ask a question like that, because the Rat Pack or the Summit, it very much earmarks a time in Vegas that is looked upon with rose-colored glasses. I mean, it's a beautiful time in Las Vegas. I mean, it's growing and everybody's cool and everybody's dressed up and staying out till 4 a.m. in the morning. You know, I mean, like tuxedos. I mean, it's just a completely different world. And that's very much encapsulated by the Sands. The Sands, that's one of the things that I wish I would have been able to have seen her in her heyday, because you have to imagine that she, when in her younger years, projected a much different affect than she did towards the end.
When you were looking at casinos and you were writing about them, were there, and it's similar to my previous question, but a little broader, were you looking for certain elements on each casino to differentiate them from each other? Such as, I mentioned, I'm going to go special events, but there's entertainment, there's food, there's gaming, etc.
I let the story tell itself because it was really more me trying to understand, how did we get to now? That was the question that loomed. When I came up with the book idea, I'm like, the question is, how did we get to now? And so each of them has their own story to tell, and I just followed the dots.
Were you able to interview anybody from not necessarily the beginning of time in Las Vegas, but people from 20, 30 years ago that are still around? Were you able to get some of their stories that help you fill out the story of a particular casino?
No, unfortunately not. I'm more of the guy hiding, looking at newspaper clippings at 3 a.m. in the morning. that's more my style.
Let's talk about your process. I normally don't like the word process, but I am intrigued whenever somebody writes a book on how they organize their research. You clearly had some of it within the podcast part of your career, but at the same time, you were, as you say, you were looking at clippings at 2 a.m. So there's a certain amount of research that goes in above what you did. How did you then put it all together to write about a particular casino or the trend of casinos as things evolved? In other words, how did you then proceed from all that research?
The story kind of told itself in that Fremont developed itself first and then the Strip and then it came later. So it was really just, I understood that there are two different worlds that I needed to report on. And that's why I had to focus on both of them, because I felt doing just one of them was a disservice, or just doing certain properties on each one. I wanted to really cover exactly what my own curiosity was, like, how did this happen? How did we get to now? I look at these pictures and all these properties were here. How did these get, you know, where did those go and how did these get here?
Well, did you end up excluding any casinos from your story?
Anything that didn't fit the narrative. And what I mean by that is We're talking about Fremont and the Strip. So anything like the Moulin Rouge didn't make it. The Landmark didn't make it. There's a couple of companies like Boyd Gaming, is a phenomenal company that'll end up being in book two. That's got a story to tell, but it just didn't fit the narrative of how did we get from the Fremont Street experience we've got now? How did that start? And how did the Strip go from being, dusty Highway 91 to the Strip?
And when you talk about the casinos evolving, do you bring it up to today's world or do you leave
Yes.
it? Okay. So you don't leave it in the 80s, 90s, or
No. It's as updated as we can be. And that's one of the great things that I got to learn is that with self-publishing, I have the ability to make a change if needs be. So I can have various versions of my book that this doesn't go out of date like so many books do, especially in Vegas.
Right. No, exactly. What did you, after you wrote the book, did you share it with maybe Karen, or did you share it with one of your listeners, or did you share it with even Dave Schwartz to have them read it through and see if there's something you were missing or needed to add something in that you hadn't thought about before?
I did. I actually reached out to a couple people. I reached out to two listeners. One is an English teacher, and the other one is married to an English teacher. And but for some reason, I felt weird about asking Karen to read the book. Like I didn't want to put that pressure on her because that's
Sure,
one of
no.
the interesting things about being an author that I've realized is that
And being
it's
married.
exciting when people buy it. With that.
I say, and being married.
Yes. But it's one thing when people buy the book, but I want them to read it. I want them to enjoy it the way that I enjoyed writing it. So you almost have this weird feeling that you're like going, so are you gonna read it? Can you read it and tell me what you think about it?
Yeah, I
So
know.
I
I
didn't
get
want to
the
put
feeling.
that undue pressure on her.
Right, especially again because you're married as well as being. Yeah. So,
Right.
when you were researching it, were there personalities that came to the fore that you hadn't been aware of before, and are they incorporated in the book? So, for example, Jay Sarno, we talked about Caesar's Palace earlier. He's a big personality, larger than life. Were there those kinds of people who you came across that you didn't know before you did your research?
Absolutely. Bill Bennett's one of them that is a humongous name that most people don't know who he is because that's the way he wanted it, or at least for a time, it's the way that he wanted it. But yeah, Bill Bennett was one that, I mean, we wouldn't have all of, I mean, basically from Excalibur down, if it weren't for Bill Bennett, we wouldn't have what is still currently a well-served low roller market. I mean, between Circus Circus and Excalibur, I mean, that we still have that market addressed on the strip for people.
Right. Yeah. It surprises me too, especially the way the strip has gone. I'm always amazed that the Circus has stayed on and seems to be successful. And Excalibur down on Tropicana, Las Vegas Boulevard, that also is a property that it's themed, but it's not necessarily the way Caesar's Palace is themed. It's a different market, as you just mentioned. And that also surprised me that they're still going as well. Not that I wish them to go away. It's not that. I'm just from an objective point of view, the way the strip has developed, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, you'd think that there wouldn't necessarily always be room for some of these properties that appeal to the lower end of the market rather than the higher end of the market. When you research the book, besides individuals such as Bennett, and I mentioned Jay Sarno, were there others that had made an impact on you as an author and that you wanted to write about because of their stamp on their property?
Kirk Kerkorian, that's another one. It's another name that the thing that I love about Kirk is a good guy. Like you hear about, like if you tell Kirk's story, in a certain way, you can make him sound sinister because the things that he did is similar to what sinister people have done before. And what I mean by that is he took advantage of companies that were struggling and bought them and then improved them and righted the ship. And some people just buy companies and sell them, but that wasn't Kirk's MO. He went in to try and make it the best property that he could possibly make. I mean, the guy made the largest hotel casino in the world 3 times in a row.
Yeah, I think the only thing that people tend to hold against Kirk, and he was a fascinating guy, was when he purchased 20th Century Fox and sold off the back lot, and then
Yes.
all of the props and all of the sets.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was the one thing that people were not happy about. But his imprint on Las Vegas is amazing in terms of what he accomplished. And he was very low key. You wouldn't even know it was him walking into the casino, but there he was. Yeah, he fascinating guy and very productive as well. When you look at some of these personalities, some go back even further in time. So, for example, you have, Jackie Gaughan for Downtown.
You just took the words out of my mouth. Jackie Gaughan, Benny Binion, J.K. Households, Mel Exper. There's a lot of great names that that Fremont Fremont evolved because of that do get addressed in this book.
Do you think they'd be surprised at where Fremont Street is these days if they were able to come back and look at it?
No, I think they were visionaries. I think these guys kind of saw where things were going. I mean, and now obviously we can only see as far as the eye can reach, but it's for these guys, like they saw where the ball was going. They saw what this city could possibly be. Now, I don't know if they would think of the Fremont Street Experience, but I'm sure they would think that it would be a thriving market still to this day.
Mm-hmm. Was there one particular of all those personalities we talked about, was there one that you would pick as the main driver of a casino, the main force behind a casino? And you can mention whoever you want. We've mentioned several and you mentioned several just now, but is there one particular one that struck you when you were writing the book?
Downtown or in general?
Either way, downtown or Steve, the trip.
Downtown, I would say it's Jackie Gaughan. Mm-hmm. But in general, I would say it's Steve Wynn. I mean, what's regardless of what's happened recently, what that man did was amazing. I mean, it was visionary kind of stuff. I mean, he reinvented the game more than once. He redefined the high end. He invented an icon in the Fountains of Bellagio. I mean, right, the Fountains of Bellagio are as identifiable as the Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas sign. I mean, it's what he did is it fascinates me from a guy that came from the outside and didn't know anything about Vegas, and I didn't know who Steve Wynn was. And once I got into the Vegas world, you understand Steve Wynn to be the biggest name in the game. And it's fascinating to me that he can be such an icon in an industry, but the general population doesn't know who he is.
Although I would challenge you a little bit on that because of the commercials that he did when he was running the Mirage, when he was running the Golden Nugget, and he would do commercials with Frank Sinatra. So there was that period of time where the general public did know who he was.
That's right. That's right.
Because I know a little history, I had to bring that up to you, Mark. So that's okay.
That's good.
Were you disappointed in any of the properties that you wrote about? If that's the word, maybe not disappointed, but were you not overly impressed by some of the casinos that you wrote the history about?
Well, I would say not to pick on Hacienda, but Hacienda was always a low roller joint from the day it kind of opened. It understood who its customer was. It stayed in its lane. It didn't do anything that was really shaky. It got into the Frontier for a little while, and that was a shaky endeavor for them. But besides that, for the most part, they just kind of stayed in their lane and did their stuff. And then one day they got bought, and then it became Mandalay Bay. You know, so there's just not a whole lot of excitement to Hacienda's story.
True. Since you moved here, have you been to any implosions?
Yes, I was at the Tropicana implosion.
And were you surprised at how quickly it went down?
Yes, and something else is that I expected I would feel it. I don't know why. I thought I would feel like a shockwave from the building. And I'm sure for safety reasons, they have us far enough away that I don't feel that shockwave. Right. But I think that was probably the thing that surprised me the most. But yeah, it was. I'm glad I did it. It was definitely a bucket list item. It was fascinating to watch how fast the whole thing just kind of falls apart. And then you're like, it's over.
Yeah. It's sad for those of us who are connected with the Tropicana to see it go, especially because it had such historic roots starting in 1957. But nothing lasts forever, evidently, except according to you, Caesar's Palace, which is still with us.
The Flamingo is still
correct.
Third property. So yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. They're still going strong. So it's good. So you mentioned about you're going to do a second book. and there's so much material for it. Is it going to take the same approach as the current book? Again, it's called From Fremont to the Strip, How Las Vegas Casinos Evolved. It's available on Amazon, Barnes, Noble, and all the usual places. Is the second volume going to be totally different or just an extension of the first?
I believe it'll be an extension in the sense that it's telling the stories of, I'll tell you here, we've already named the book. It's going to be Icons and Legends. And it basically just covering all the people that were like, these people's story still needs to be told, like Boyd Gaming, Benny Binion, the Moulin Rouge, the Landmark. Like, these are all stories that don't fit in this first book, but they easily fit in and deserve a place in a second book.
Before I let you go, what do you want people to take from your book?
Just learn.
Okay.
Nice. Just learn the history. I try to share my enthusiasm through the book, and I hope that really comes through on the page. This is something that I'm incredibly passionate about. I get so excited talking about Vegas history, and being able to share this with people, like it brings me happiness to know that somebody could get lost for a good 12 hours in something that I did.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, too, I would think a lot of old timers that are around would get a kick out of reading the book because it will bring back memories that they may have not remembered in terms of a particular casino that they either played in, worked in, or just knew it was there. It was one of those things.
Right.
Yeah. Do you see the future of Las Vegas as bright?
I do. I think she's got some evolving to do. The middle market needs to be a little more flushed out right now. It seems the high end's a little over heavy. And I think we're going to see another boutique hotel coming along somewhere. I think either on the Riviera site, on the Fertitta site, possibly, or on the Casino Royale site. I think we're going to see another Cosmopolitan-esque boutique hotel that will do a lot with a small footprint.
So there's still room for the boutique hotel because we keep getting bigger and bigger with our casinos here. So,
but I think we've topped out.
Yeah. And so now they're going to break out into a little bit of a niche market where you have a boutique hotel catering to a certain type of market. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Mark Witowicz. He's author of Vegas, From Fremont to the Strip, A Las Vegas Casino's Evolved. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Mark, go to 360VegasPodcast.com, 360VegasPodcast.com, and follow him on Facebook and X. And Mark, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Ira.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey,